Down to Brass Tacks for Wednesday, January 29th. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be your host until 2 o'clock. With me is Michelle Brathwaite, and together we will hopefully be able to answer some of your queries and look into some of the situations that you're very concerned about. Of course, Michelle's voice will be the first you'll hear when you call us today at 43-41790. You can also let us know your thoughts via WhatsApp at 266-4862. There are a couple of things on my mind, and the first, it's very depressing actually, and I hate to start on a depressing note, but this morning, Eagle Hall, and then also Baxter's Road, and I noticed also at Whitehall, there's a guy stationed there, but increasingly, I'm seeing, wherever I go through Bridgetown, or leading to Bridgetown, people begging. Some are very, very polite, and they come to you and they ask you for $2. And, you know, it's $2, so you might pass it on. But I noticed that every day you're seeing the same people in the same positions, in the same places, and they're begging for money. Now, this is a phenomenon I would not like to see continue, but I understand it. It would happen. A lot of us are hurting. The economy has not been good for several years. And there are some people who have fallen through the cracks, so I can understand it. But it's a phenomenon that I would really not like to see grow in Barbados, because I've seen it in other Caribbean territories, specifically Trinidad, that I would be thinking of, and to a lesser extent, Jamaica. But it's really sad seeing someone, especially older people, like the guy in Eagle Hall, stationed along the walls just before you get to the traffic lights. He walks up and down with his stick, knocking the wall. I'm not sure if he's visually impaired or not. I have to assume that, given the fact that he's walking with a stick, but as I said, it's an assumption because I don't know. And remember on Monday, we gave him $2. And yesterday, Pastor, he was there, but the lights were green, so I had to move on. And then this morning, he came again. And I realized that this is this guy's office of operations. As I said, I know that the Vagrants Association, Bakeem Arsafri, that they're trying to do a lot to help homeless people, but I don't know if these people are homeless or not. But the point is, it's a trend that I'm seeing. Also, something that I keep seeing, there's in Green Hill, and I saw another guy this morning in Baxter's Road going through the garbage, picking up bottles. Well, that's something that's been going on for years, yes. But I also noticed this guy was actually taking a piece of bread out of the garbage. As I said, it's depressing, and I'm sorry to start the show like this, but when I see things like that, it's very, very depressing. And we, as average Barbadians, need to be aware that there are people out there who are hurting. And because they're hurting, they do certain things. Yes, some of us will say some of these people have mental challenges and whatnot, but not all do. There are some people who would prefer to fend for themselves, and this is what they get up to. So it's really sad when I see it, and hopefully there's an answer coming, but it's not something that I would really like to see happen in Barbados. A couple other things that I have on my mind. One would be the coronavirus that's sweeping Wuhan province in China and now affecting all over the world. Hopefully later in the program, we'll get someone from the Ministry of Health to give us an update. We're working on that. And the other thing that is really on my mind too is the earthquake situation, the seismic activity that's taking place throughout the Caribbean. I mean, a couple of days ago, we had that 7+ earthquake in off Jamaica. And I remember Dr. Latchman from the UWI, University of the West Indies Seismic Research Center, has been saying for a long time that we're in line for a big one. I think we have Dr. Lachman on the line right now. Dr. Lachman, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Shankar and Ms. Brastak.
Good. Thank you very much. You're on Brastak on VOB. Now, as I said, for a long time you've been saying that we're due for a major event. You made the point that we have several hundred seismic, well, let's say earthquakes, in a year. And but this one in Jamaica, I saw pictures that even in parts in Miami, people were emptying offices. I mean, how really major was this one?
Okay, so this earthquake at 7.7 that occurred between Cuba, Jamaica, and the Cayman Islands yesterday was what we would, in the class of what we describe as major earthquake. So in seismology, earthquakes that are magnitude 7 to 7.9 are classified as major. This is a very significant earthquake. Fortunately, it was shallow, but distant. Shallow earthquakes do the most damage if they occur close to population centers. So in 2010, the Haiti earthquake was at 10 kilometers depth, but it was also 10 kilometers distant from Port-au-Prince. This earthquake was about 100 kilometers, 140, I think it is, away from Jamaica, and a little closer to Cayman, so their shaking would have been more. So because of that distance, the kind of damage that we have seen in these territories is fairly small, considering it's a magnitude 7.7 earthquake.
What is the fact that we're getting, at least it seems to me, that the earthquakes seem to be getting stronger and stronger. What is that suggesting to you as a seismologist?
Okay, so what I'm going to describe to you here is some of my own research. And as you would appreciate with all scientists, there are those who would concur and there are those who would be of different opinion. So I'm just telling you what my research tells me. So if we look at the Caribbean plate, it's a very small plate wedged between the North American and South American plates. And relative to those two plates, it is moving at a very slow rate of 2 centimeters per annum, which is as much as your fingernails grow. So as fast as your fingernails grow. So our strain energy on our big faults take a long time to accumulate. So the time period between our great earthquake, so anything that is 8 and above is described as a great earthquake, is hundreds of years. So we can become complacent and we are seeing great earthquakes in Japan and Chile and thinking that that kind of earthquake occurs in those places, down in Indonesia and such places. And we tell ourselves, because it's hundreds of years between our great earthquakes, that we don't have to worry anymore. What these major earthquakes is telling us is that our large faults that can accumulate strain energy to deliver those great earthquakes, they have been loading, and at this stage, given that this class of earthquake that we saw off Jamaica, if we consider earthquakes in the magnitude 7.6 to magnitude 8 range as a class of earthquake, so since looking at data from 1973 off the USGS, because Seismic Research Center is responsible for the Eastern Caribbean, so we have our own data for that area. But if I want to look at the Caribbean plate, I have to go to the global agencies. So we have had 5 such earthquakes since 1973. They have occurred in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and now Jamaica. So that number tells me that one of our faults that can, at least one of our faults that can generate a magnitude 8 earthquake is just about right. And there are lots of physical influences that would affect when such an earthquake would occur, but we are well due and poised for the Caribbean plate system to deliver such an earthquake.
That is very frightening indeed. But, you know, we can prepare for a hurricane, but how can we prepare for an earthquake?
So we ask this question all the time, and the science, we at the Seismic Research Center, we have been in operation since 1953. Other agencies around the Caribbean have been in operation, some longer, some shorter. But we have been sending the message to all authorities that this is the hazard to which we are vulnerable. And based on our economic standing and our seismic hazards, we need to factor that into our development because we are not wealthy countries and we cannot afford to find the money to start over when the great earthquake occurs and occurs close to our population center and sends us back 30 years. So we need to be planning for that earthquake way in advance. We need to have our building codes in place. We need to have our response mechanisms in place so that when and not if that event occurs, our measures are there and we can respond like Chile. The last earthquake we had in Chile, which was a great earthquake, compared with what happened in Haiti, a 7 compared with an 8.8 earthquake, they were poles apart in the kind of damage we saw. So if we would construct this earthquake resistance in mind, if we would have the facilities so that what damage that we would incur, because there's no such thing as earthquake-proof, earthquake-resistance, we can respond and we can be resilient to these events when they occur. We will sustain a few deaths compared to what happened in Chile with 250,000 deaths in Haiti. So those are the comparisons we need to make, and these are the comparisons that our authorities need to look at when they're planning how to invest the available funds in our development.
Mm-hmm. The final...
As individuals, let me just say quickly, as individuals, we have a part to play mm-hmm. in being prepared as individuals. So I would recommend that we visit the websites and we go to our disaster offices and we collect all the information that would help us to be prepared as individuals.
All right. The last question that I ask is, the number of earthquakes that are occurring here in the Caribbean, as you usually say, there are hundreds occurring every year. And so we had this one up in Jamaica. We've had some in the Eastern Caribbean area. But what is the possibility? Okay, if you're going to have this major event, where is it likely going to take place? Because it's a wide area.
Yes, that's a million-dollar question. This recent earthquake that we had off Jamaica occurred in an area that has been quiet. If you look at a plot of earthquakes around the Caribbean plate, that particular area was quiet. And sometimes that is what we see. They're described as seismic gaps, and then the earthquake occurs and fills that gap. So we have a number of those areas around the Caribbean, and those are likely places. Sometimes we also see areas that are very busy, and they would then host another such event. So it is difficult to say just where such an earthquake or such earthquakes would occur. And for this reason, because earthquakes of that size can impact vast areas, and depending on the depth of the earthquake, it can inflict significant damage over a wide area. Also, our earthquake in 1843, which has been estimated to have been between magnitude 8.1 and 8.5, was devastating from northern Dominica to Ceiba. That's a fairly extensive area. Mm-hmm.
It is.
So we all need to be prepared, whether or not the earthquake is going to occur, because there's no way for us to know. We all need to be prepared.
All right, Dr. Latchman, thank you for taking this time to discuss this with us. Really frightening, because as I said, we don't know when. We just know that hundreds of earthquakes do take place in the Caribbean on an annual basis.
Let me correct that. It is actually thousands. Just in the Eastern Caribbean alone, we are recording over 2,500 earthquakes every year.
Are you serious? 2,500 earthquakes in the Eastern Caribbean alone?
Greater than magnitude 2. Yeah.
Wow. Frightening. Dr. Lakshman, thank you for taking this time to join us here in Dr. Brass Tacks, and we'll be in touch.
You're most welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, what a way to start. 2,500 earthquakes, and unlike a hurricane, when we know it's coming and we can prepare, we don't know when this is coming, but we know it is. They're going to happen, and that is why building codes are so important. That's why putting disaster measures in place are so important. And for all those who can hear my voice, that is why we need to cooperate with the authorities and try to get au fait with all the necessary measures that we need to do that could minimize the impact it would have on our homes and our communities in particular. And this issue of building codes continues to arise, and it has to be dealt with. We talk a lot about a lot of things, but the implementation deficit is so high in around this place, it's unbelievable. But clearly, we need to deal with this issue. We just can't continue ignoring it. Anyhow, let's go to the phone lines because they're all light. Good morning. You are on the air.
Good morning, Sanka.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm not sure if this is a good thing or not, but I seem to your most frequent first caller, but no, I'm not complaining. I want to compliment you for having I think it was most timely and appropriate and informative. You're having Dr. Latchman, is the name?
Sorry. Yeah, John Latchman.
Yeah. I think it is almost divine, I would think. I'll tell you why. But I saw some pictures, though, that were floating around in the social media about events in Jamaica and Cayman Island yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it reminded me. Let me start here. I had the fortune, the experience of experiencing an earthquake in New Zealand a few years ago. I was in a hotel, and they had this event, this earthquake event, and I was in bed after it happened. And the bed, and of course the bed and the room, everything was shaking and moving and gyrating and whatnot. But there was no damage done to that building, because apparently the building was constructed with earthquakes in Miami, and they used rubber tires, mm-hmm. in the construction that would help to absorb and help to manage the stresses and the forces that were at work. So when he heard Dr. Latchman, and because let me go back a bit, when it was going up, there was a saying that Barbados, there'd be no earthquakes in Barbados because we were a coral island. I know if you remember hearing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the time.
Right. But then when I went to Colmar and I did physical geography and we did about earth movements and whatnot, I learned differently. Mm-hmm. So when I heard Dr. Latchman this morning, it made me wonder if these factors are being considered when modern buildings in Barbados are being built. For example, they don't actually talk about they don't have, would that have been factored in people designing the Hyatt Hotel, for example?
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder.
I should hope so.
It would make you wonder if that have been factored in. But then, apart from that, you have to not only the earthquake is the possibly the tsunami, right? So if you take these factors into consideration, one has to wonder the desirability. I know we talk about not building out the sea coast for aesthetic purposes of interest of the sea, but should we therefore be considering this factor, especially when there are other projects being earmarked for Bridgetown, like the Treasury building, the new Treasury building, for housing purposes, the Carlisle Park, the Carlisle House, et cetera, et cetera. I hope that the builders, the designers, the engineers, et cetera, would have factored in all of these, all this information that she has given out. Very useful information. And you thought you were scared. I wasn't scared. It's chilling. It really drives something through. You know, these are the real possibilities you're dealing with when you see it happening a couple hundred miles away.
The thing about it is that when she said, I was saying several hundred, because I really can't remember the figure, but I know that we're set there several hundred, because I've interviewed her in the past. But when she said at least 2,500 a year, just in the Eastern Caribbean alone, that is 2 point whatever, you know, above.
Right.
That is frightening. I mean, that is really frightening.
We are all vulnerable.
And the thing about it is, you know, we don't know, like, 5 days away that it's going to happen, that we can take some sort of precautions or whatever.
But I thought the event we had was 2007?
I can't remember the year, but it's in 2000.
I think it was 7. I thought that would have awakened. I was abroad at the time, but I remember talking to my daughter on the phone, and she was calling me while it was happening. The car was moving, all kind of things were happening. I thought that would open Barbadian eyes to the fact that this was a very strong possibility for us, and this idea that it can't happen here is a myth. But I think people have to understand, from my knowledge of physical geography, and I'm not a seismologist or a great geographer, but I know the basics, is that Earth is never what they call in a state of homeostasis, totally static and quiet. They're always making adjustments and movement. If you have a movement here, it's going to have impact. That's just then adjust to it. It's always in a constant state of movement and flux and whatnot.
Yeah.
So when one understands that, that makes it unappreciable that virtually anything can happen at any time.
Yeah.
But I also had to put this in the context of Minister Humphrey yesterday in the House of Assembly talked about building of islands offshore. How is that going to factor? If we are vulnerable as we are now, we are an old geographical country, hundreds of thousands of millions of years old, right? I would think that anything put on that would be extraneous and artificial and would not have the depth and the solidity. So to me, those kind of things seem a little fanciful to me.
Not really, if you think about it. Because of the engineering feats that can be achieved now and the cost effectiveness of them has been improved by technology.
You're talking about buildings?
We're not only buildings, we're talking even islands. I mean, building islands is nothing new. It's been going on for several years.
I didn't say it was new.
Right, but the real concern would be how we are going to start looking at using building codes. How can we start retrofitting, if we can, homes in Barbados, the cost involved. For me, that is the real issue here. I'm not too worried about things that are going to be built now, because I would like to think, I don't want to say assume, because you know what I say about assume. I would like to think that if you're going to invest $100 million or more dollars, or even $10 million in any building, that you're going to take all these factors into consideration. But for the average individual who can just afford a small home, you know, and these days, the average house be starting around $250,000. What can you do to that foundation that will make that structure strong enough that it can withstand the jolts of a 6 or 7 point something earthquake? You know, That to me is the real issue here. And this is what we really, I think, should be focusing on. I'm not worried about if you're going to invest millions or billions of dollars in islands or anything like that, because if you're going to make that level of investment, you're going to have to take all sorts of factors into consideration, right? But it is the average person whose livelihood, whose future can be cut short if they have the wrong type of structure that they're living in, one that is not secure in any way.
But it seems to me that it's not just, I appreciate your point about the average individual, of which I'm one, and that I would have to take that into consideration. What I'm also concerned about, the institutions in Barbados, the buildings that house certain integral institutions. Even though my house might survive, or yours might survive, if those institutions are not there to make allow the society to function and to do the remedial work, we still will be in serious problems. We will have even more problems than individuals.
Agreed.
Because you need institutions. You know, we talk about the importance of institutions, the function of any society, the well-being of any society. So we also have the fact that the buildings that house crucial institutions, police, fire, hospitals, the defense force, the DMX, all the institutions that make up, even warehouses for food.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a total societal effort, and not just some, as people think, but it doesn't concern me. It's just the builders. I think the whole society has to wake up now and take this into consideration and start to prepare for the possibility.
Do you think that there's that level of planning that is done at the policy level?
I doubt. I would love to hear Hayat come on and assure us that.
No. I don't mean. I'm not talking about Hayat and the private sector.
Yeah, but
I am talking Hayat about government. You were a government minister, So what I'm asking is, when you sit in cabinet and you look at the plans in terms of the development plans and whatnot, would the consideration be given to disaster management at that level, factoring in all these possibilities, storm surge, from a hurricane, possibility of tsunamis, possibility of earthquakes? In other words, where Sadim is sited now is in Lower State. It's nice and central. You can access most parts of Barbados from their location, because it's centrally located. Should we have emergency warehousing there so that we can store food? Should we have a major hospital in that area because it's central enough and it is high enough that it will be able to avoid storm surges or whatnot? You know, it's those are the types of factors, and I'm wondering if these things go into the thinking of the policymakers when they sit down to consider the development plan.
I left cabinet almost 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in those days, I would mostly be present when you're having planning and priority committee meetings where all the projects were brought to the committee with the prime minister, planning, and they would go through projects and whatnot. So I was never exposed to that detailed examination. And I would like to think it has existed, and even since then, that has gotten even better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more integral to planning, so I really don't want to pronounce on things.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't even want to speculate. I would just like to let you hope so, right? That has been factored in, and that we can be assured that these things are being considered. But before you go, you mentioned about central location, when you were talking about Sadim and hospitals, etc., more centrally located, one and whatnot. I see the actions being taken for the building of a new police fire service headquarters in the Pine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have never objected to a new police, to new fire service headquarters, or even the demolition of the National Insurance Building or the police fire service headquarters. All I was talking about the process, and I was interested in two things. I was interested to see that yesterday the question of process, and that process should be followed and respected, was raised in the House of Assembly when they were talking about Valerie and Grotto, how they were built, and the outcome and their cost, etc. And in addition, I wonder about I still think that if you have a headquarters in the Pine, you should still have a satellite station close to the prison, even if in the area of the harbour or whatever. Because the traffic being what it is, and yesterday Dennis and some and people were talking about traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine fire trucks coming down at some time of the day? You know how busy Calmar Rock is, the Pine Road, Beverly, Belmont Road is. Can you imagine having to beat the GI to get through that to come into a fire into Bridgetown?
Mm-hmm.
Where time is crucial. I am saying that there's still enough room in Bridgetown for a smaller service.
Mm-hmm. A satellite station.
Mm-hmm. That can service that they go there quickly until the other reinforcement come into being. I would think that makes practical sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the location of the current headquarters was put there. I remember that era for very good reasons. For the very same reason, I want to get to fire as quickly as the war. They say the first 3-5 minutes can make a lot of difference to any outcome any fire.
What I would add to that, because I heard the discussion on the vehicles and the traffic situation, because I did a story sometime last year or late last year about the numbers of vehicle imports and the fact that all these cars are being imported is worrying to me, because I keep saying, you know, we're not getting any bigger as a country. Our roads are not getting any wider. So we can't continue importing this volume of cars. Anyhow, the point that I offer
the society viable alternative.
Yes.
And I think then you will get a change of heart.
Yeah, but the whole point here about the fire service and whatnot, and about the traffic in particular, is that parking. People park really indiscriminately in a number of these areas. For example, let's look at the districts in Bridgetown that have housing. So we'd be talking Greenfields, we'd be talking New Orleans and a few other places. Some of these roads are blocked. They can only take a small unit coming through. Because these roads are blocked because people have cars parked, they have abandoned vehicles all in the roads and whatnot. You see, and it goes back to the point I keep talking about here all the time. We do not take care of the little things. We are not, you know, like years ago, like how people used to be, you had the health inspector coming around and checking the premises, so that you could avoid public health hazards developing.
Right.
Likewise, you need to have some inspectorate going around districts and whatnot, getting cars, getting abandoned vehicles off the street,
and
enforcing these things. You know, but the problem is not enough of that is being done in this country.
And there used to be, taking care of the small things. I believe in that philosophy because I subscribe to the view of the broken.
Take care of the cents and the dollars take care of themselves.
No, there was a time when riding a bicycle with a light was considered an offense. Before a light or before a bell, the police enforce all the things because if you care for a little L, any snow American take an L.
All the time.
All the time. But it's human nature, so you have to take that in consideration and enforce authority. Thank you very much, Frank. Thank you.
All right, Glenn, have a good day. We'll take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. On the WhatsApp, one person here is saying, "There, a lady begs for money, I wouldn't say where, daily. One night I saw her counting her money, $250 plus. Another person says, begging is a job that pays well. If they were not coming out licking, you would never see them again, especially in the same location. A lot of those people go and buy alcohol, smokes, and or drugs, but not all. I give my contribution directly to the church or Salvation Army. Another one says, I heard your opening remarks and I would like to add my 2 cents worth. I would also like to tell parents not to allow their children, especially little girls, to go around with sponsor walk sheets. They can take the sheets in and get the sponsors themselves. That is what the majority of parents do now. These are different times. So we're getting some reaction to the whole thing of begging. Let's go back to the phone lines. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Shankar.
How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine, and good morning to your panel. Shankar, I want to touch on your point with vagrants and stuff. Sanka, sometimes we're sorry for people, eh? But sometimes when you sit down and think, there's people that have good head. They could do something to make a living. And I mean anything to make a living. But you see that family togetherness that have a problem with these people. When you have your family, you don't know where your brother eating, where if he eating from garbage man. You don't know where he's sleeping. You don't know where your sister's sleeping, where she waking, because the family is not together. And they don't want to. If your family, you brother or your sister steal something from you, I don't want you on my place because he steal my bread, he steal my corned beef, he steal my sardine. But he hungry. That's why he steal. You don't give him anything. You just throw the food when you cook it. When you don't want to stay back, you throw it before you give your brother because you see he, I don't like he because he cursed me so bad already. All that. These things you have to forgive your brother and your sister. That family togetherness is not there. Another thing people could do, do something to make a living. I look at a man that's come from Crab Hill area. The man arrived from Crab Hill with dunks, with cane, with mango, on his bicycle, all that way from that place up St. Lucie, and sell every day. He does that and make a dollar. People take dunks from him. They credit dunks from him and stuff. They credit a bag and they sell. He goes in the bush every day and do that as a living. He don't take nobody things. He don't walk about eating stuff from garbage pan. He make an honest dollar. Now, there's all people that can't help themselves. Sometimes they only have $15. They have $20. They want their yard cut. You don't want to work for $20 or $15. You don't want to cut the old lady yard for $20 or $15. You prefer to go and eat stuff from the garbage pan and sit by the road and beg. You prefer to do that when you could go and sit down and work. Then, the family togetherness, you need to pay more attention to your family. You can't expect to have your family out there eating from garbage pan and you don't know when he's eating from garbage pan. Even when your family missing, you don't know your own family missing and he must be gone and drunk himself and dead because he have problems. You see? All those things they don't even know when their family dead in the house because they're not together with their family. Nobody thinks about family. They just thinks about themselves. So those things, we all have to think of. Years ago, I went to Trinidad, Sanka. And when I see these people lying on the road, I cry. I cry tears from my eye because I didn't understand it.
Pretty
women and men.
Yes. What era was that? In the 80s, the 90s?
Yes. Between that time.
Because in Woodford Square at the time, especially in the evening times.
There used to be in Sanford, down after you pass the immigration department, the big house, the immigration house.
Yes.
They used to be on that street.
Right.
Lying down.
Yeah.
But listen, you could not have passed and mashed those people or touched those people. Those people used to sleep with weapons on the ground there and to harm you. You understand? No.
They were said to protect themselves.
Yes, they used to protect themselves. When people bring me and show me where some of these people come from and where they live in, big houses, nice houses, but the family, they're together only because they must be take a bread from the family or tin of sardine, I ain't want him back in my place. But if you look at it for because he steals something, he opens his house to steal something. Why he have to open her? He's her son. Why he have to break her house to steal something? Something is definitely wrong. And that is why I just always say the magistrate need to use their own discretion when they see those cases come in front of them.
They do.
Something is definitely going on.
I've been in court with some of these cases, and I can tell you, it's often a very emotional very emotional thing because
this is for my life. Sanka.
Okay, go right ahead.
So you could know where I'm coming from.
Yes, go right ahead.
Years ago, right when I was a younger girl, my mother had a boyfriend, and when my mother cooked, because my boyfriend didn't like her children, and my mother leave back food. He used to be the cooking one, because my mother used to teach. Right? Listen, he will take that if he leave back food in the pot, and he know my mother children that wasn't his children, and he know my mother children had to eat it, he will throw it in the drain where the water run in. Sanka, in the drain where the water, my mother take money from his money to buy a uniform for she children. He will curse and fight my mother for the money back. Don't take it. I deal with you and not with your children. But how you could be dealing with a woman? A woman have 5 children or 8 children, and you don't deal with your children. You understand? So all these things make me grow up fast. Went and work, right? Finish my schooling. Then go back to school as a big woman to learn, to make my life better. And I say I will never like my children to grow up in those kind of a way. Never. That's why I work hard, provide for my children, send them to college, send them to university, send them all about and make them learn. And I tell them what my mother had went through with that man and her children. You understand what I'm saying, Tanka? All these things people have to look into. You got to starve your children because of your man. You got to starve your children because of your husband. And your children got to stay hungry because your husband don't like your children. You understand? A lot of things is going on. The family is not together, Sanka.
Agreed. Family togetherness is really what matters. And I understand exactly where you're coming from. I've heard similar types of stories over the years from people, and I've seen the scars of it in terms of abuse. But the point I was making in terms of in court, in magistrate's court in particular, when some of these issues come up, it's usually a very emotional thing. And the magistrates, all the magistrates that I have had the privilege of being in court with when these matters came up, they often extend that hand of human kindness always. The toughest magistrates always, they always try to find some way that, some sort of reconciliation that they try to go for. But the relationship is often so fractured between either the parents or parent and the accused, the son or the, well, it's usually a son, and it's usually a drug problem, that there's no trust there. And because of that, they don't want that person, that child around anymore, because he has totally abused their trust. He's totally abused the relationship, and they're totally disillusioned. And in some cases, they are scared that he will kill them. And because of that, the magistrate would have to protect them from him. So sometimes these are decisions that the magistrates face. It's sad that it comes to that. But as I said, I've been in court. I've seen these things for myself. I've heard the cases. So, I know how difficult it is. It can't be easy. Anyway, thank you very much for your call. And as you said, family togetherness is everything. It really, really is. We move to our next call. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air.
I have 2 questions. I believe, right, that if a person squat on land, they should not be on the land. They're breaking the law, first thing. They ain't paying no land tax, right? And secondly, I can't see why they want to give them a bounty, give them some money. They find somewhere to move them. They're going to be moving them and putting them on other lands and then turn around then and then giving them some sort of money as well. I don't think that is fair for the taxpayers. We, the taxpayers, are paying too much money already. We have to pay national insurance and tax on our pay, and then we finish with that, we go to the supermarket and pay 15.17% VAT, you know, and on and on and on with the taxes. A country can't run without taxes, but we can't take no more, and plus to the high prices in the supermarket, everywhere you go, everything is so high. And when you listen to some of the things that people usually have on during the day, when they say they eat bread, fruit, and chicken neck and all sorts of things like that to survive, the bills killing you. Because some pensioners, when they get their money, most of it go have to go to pay the bills and stuff. And those things are not good, right? My next point to you is...
Before you move on to your next point.
I believe that...
Before you move on to before you read your next point, let me engage you here about this quarters, okay? What would you suggest is the government does with these squatters?
What should they suggest that
what
government
would you suggest they do?
Squatters? Yes. First thing, they have no right on the land.
We know
first
that. They
break
that.
The law.
If fine, we know that. But what do you do with them now?
What would I do with them now?
Yes.
I would tell them straight and plain, they need to get off the land first.
Get off and go where?
And who are they? Are they Belgians?
The majority of people up there are Barbadians. Who, but where will they go?
They have no right being there.
Fine. Yeah, but you're telling us what we already know. I'm asking you, what is the solution? You need to get them from there. Do you just scatter them in the wind? Or do you
find some place to put them?
So what is your solution? What is the solution?
You'll find some place to put them. But at the same point in time, they have other people who apply at National Housing Corporation for land and house and all sorts of things and can't get them. This is and these things is not fair. This is not fair in the system. You're putting other people before other people that were waiting for house spots and all sorts.
And I agree with you on that point. Yes. But at the same time, you have what we have a lot, and this is the point that I was making with Glenn Murray about we are not doing enough follow through and making sure that problems don't occur by checking, doing check-ins, variety of things. From day one, we know that these people should not have been there. Early in the late 90s, I think it was, some measures moved. Something was done to move them. Since then, it has gotten worse. The point I am making here is that they're there. We, the government, okay, and I'm not dealing with any administration because the government is a continuum. We've created this problem because instead of moving these people and making sure that nobody else went on the land, we allow this problem to occur. You cannot scatter these people in the wind. You cannot do it. You have to find some place where they can be put, and you have to regularize them, and they need to understand that from here on in, they have to pay their way like everybody else. As a taxpayer, I personally don't like the idea of money being paid out in this way. But the reality is that you cannot scatter these people into the wind. You just can't. You have to find a solution that is workable. So it is one thing to be emotional about these things, because I've heard the talk. When the initial offer was made, I heard that talk too. You know, and there's a lot of this pushback. But the reality is that you cannot just say get out and kick them out like dogs and, you know, on the street, because then you're creating another set of problems that could even be worse. It don't work so. What we have to do is to make sure that when they are moved off this land, that nobody else can go on that land. And this is just one area, you know. This is just one area. I remember well in the Bell. I remember that well, that situation, the Bell. When those people went on the land and all the foolishness that was done then and said then by people in government, and nothing was done. And now what? They're still there and still causing problems to our water supply. I mean, you know, so it's wanting to come on this program or any program and to just be emotional and say, well, they shouldn't be doing this and this and that. That is fine. We know what the problem is. Finding the solution is what we need to look at. And that's all I'm suggesting to you. Go on to your next point.
But you think it is fair. But you think it.
I just said I don't think it is fair. And I used to pay a lot. And I paid a lot of taxes.
You pay taxes.
And I pay real taxes. Trust me. The higher salary, the more taxes you pay. So I really am not happy. But
for all years out there, because if you don't pay taxes, they're gonna come at once. So the property and all sorts of things like that. Them things ain't right.
Fine. But at the same time, it happened already. So we're gonna keep on harping on that. What is the solution? If you're still at the stage where you're still quarreling about the problem, and you're not looking at the solution, then you're not gonna go anywhere. The solution is to move the people, and then to make sure that nobody else can go on that land or any other government land or any other land like that where they can do squatting. That is what we need to do. We have to put measures in place where we are doing the right things. That is what we need to be doing. And that's the point that I'm making to you. So it's wanted to be to continue to say, it ain't right. But if you don't come with a solution, then you're wasting time. It's just hot air. Okay?
Yeah.
Move on to your second point.
Well, my second point is, right, seeing that they had a new program at Customs, right, and they were having a little challenges and stuff, right? People had things in there that their families and whatnot send them for Christmas, and they were in there for a long time. And I believe that they claim that the rate from the increase in postal rate, right, from $150 to $10 you got to pay from the 1st of January, okay? Good. But I tend to think if the items reach Barbados before was there since last year, 2019, right? People shouldn't have to pay $10, right? They should be paying the same old rate. Those things could never be right. You understand? Because they had a problem down by the port and stuff, so they should take those things into consideration. They should look at the billing later and see when the things arrive in the island and charge them accordingly. If something came in on the 1st of January, I could understand that. Right, and then on top of that, you got to pay 17.17% VAT plus duty. Good, right? And everything is taxes and duty. You got to pay, yeah. But at the same time, I think the rate is a bit too high, as well.